Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
New jobless numbers out, where we stand and where we are headed. Teachers unions and Betsy DeVos leaving her cabinet post. Oh, are they being vocal? And today on the show, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, January 11th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And don't forget this, when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. We have 2 guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off with Rich Bloomingdale. Rick Bloomingdale, he goes by, is the 4th president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. He's had that position for 10 years. Oddly enough, that's the same time frame that Tim Berger was the president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. In fact, we had Rick on the show about maybe 6 weeks ago. And good guy, a fighter, no doubt about that. Things we're going to get into. Number one, we'll take a look at defending democracy. You know what's going on in America ever since the storming of the Capitol last week. We'll talk about that. Look at the future, workers' rights, workers' safety, and the legislative agenda in Pennsylvania. They have an interesting scenario panning out. Republicans who control the Pennsylvania Senate have refused to seat a Democrat elected in November because of a lawsuit brought by his rival. The Democrat, Jim Brewster, defeated his GOP opponent, Nicole Zicarelli, in his bid to represent Allegheny County. That's right around Pittsburgh. Not a happy place today. Although the race was a close one, state officials certified Brewster's win last year. Here's the problem. At the heart of the Republicans' objection is a pending lawsuit over more than 300 mail-in ballots that were not dated on the outer envelope, as state law says they should be. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, however, decided that the ballots should be counted because the handwritten date is not technically mandatory. However, Zicarelli, still fighting back, arguing that the ballots in question should not be counted. And if they're disqualified, that would be enough to overturn the result of the election. You know, I always say every vote counts. Every vote counts. And what we have seen here is a nail-biter in so many races. And that's why Trump has been doing what he's doing, claiming that, you know what, there's some improprieties here, and so many people believe that, although the court said no. Well, we'll talk about all of that with Rick Bloomingdale. Andrew Tinkham will be our second guest on the show, and he's with the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, occ.ohio.gov. We'll get an update on House Bill 6. And this is a mess because we had an FBI raid last year in the state of Ohio. And as a result, a number of people, members of the Republican Party and a legislator who was reelected, indicted because they set up a scheme with First Energy, the utility that oversees 2 nuclear power plants, big company. And bottom line is they got a lot of money to make sure that House Bill 6 would pass. 3 bills were introduced in the Ohio General Assembly to repeal, and they went nowhere. Nowhere. However, even though the bills did not become law, a court in Franklin County granted a preliminary injunction blocking part of the charges to customers that HB 6 provided. Nuclear subsidies from being collected from electric consumers, which was set to be collected starting January 1. So that's all on hold. Second story we're going to get into is a Supreme Court win involving Ohio Edison residential customers who could see a refund. And lastly, natural gas, the standard choice offer. This is really fascinating. Accepting an offer from an energy marketer, and there's plenty of them out there, can be really, really risky. And the Office of the Ohio Consumer Counsel has some data on this. From Columbia Gas, for example, it shows from 1997 to 2018, people in Ohio who chose a marketer paid $1.6 billion more than if they remained on the utility's competitive standard choice offer. And through October, that number has grown to more than $1.8 billion, which is lost. Is absolutely lost. It is confusing. There's no doubt about that. And you get these offers in the mail all the time. Oh, we want to switch your natural gas and electricity. And this is all part of deregulation that's supposed to save you money. And in this case, obviously, it did just the opposite. So Andrew is going to talk about all of that as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the Department of Labor reported on Friday that 140,000 jobs were eliminated from payrolls around the country in December. The monthly jobs report marks the first time since last spring that there was a net decline in employment. Most sectors face major job loss, with leisure and hospitality cutting close to 500,000 jobs in the last couple of weeks of 2020. Last couple of weeks. So keep this in mind. The labor market was digging out from over 22 million jobs lost because of the coronavirus. All right. The job market is almost 10 million jobs short of where it was before the pandemic hit, with 55% of the jobs lost in March of last year and April coming back. That's where we are right now. We got a long way to go, and we got a long way to go when it comes to manufacturing. Got this from Scott Paul, who we featured on the show last week. He heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Manufacturing gained 38,000 jobs in December. All right. Hey, that's pretty good. 38,000. Well, guess what? The sector is still down 543,000 jobs since February. The entire economy, keep in mind what I just said, lost 140,000 jobs last month. So factory jobs, over a half million gone as a result of the pandemic. Now, one change in the labor market is shifting hiring patterns. Several economists have noted that over the past several months, many employers have not added permanent positions to their payrolls. Instead, companies are hiring temps, temporary workers, allowing them to quickly adjust in light of what are now inevitable fluctuations in the economy. That's scary just to read that. According to the leader of a staffing firm, employers are still very, very cautious related to their workforce strategy. And because the Department of Labor and economists point to the rising number of COVID-19 cases to explain this decline in employment, one analyst has noted that we cannot see the labor market getting a whole lot better until we get the pandemic under control. That goes without saying, I would imagine. Betsy DeVos is no longer head of the Department of Education. This was coming anyway because of the change of administration, but she announced her resignation late last Wednesday after the deadly attack on the Capitol carried out by Trump supporters. And she blamed the president for the violence. This is what she said in a news release. That behavior was unconscionable for our country. There is no mistaking the impact that your rhetoric had on the situation. And it is the inflection point for me. So at that point, she turned in her resignation. She had, what, 13 days to go? Well, the heads of the two teachers' unions are pretty happy about this. I mean, like I said, this was just a matter of time. Hours after she announced her resignation, Randy Weingarten, head of the American Federation of Teachers, said two words, good riddance, good riddance. And then there's Becky Pringle. Becky is the president of the National Education Association, and she said on Twitter, resigning 13 days before the end of this administration does nothing, nothing to erase the harm that you have done to this country's students, their families, and educators. Pringle went on that DeVos has failed our students yet again when they needed her the most. Her complicity, cowardice, and complete incompetence will be her legacy. Now, keep in mind that Betsy DeVos indirectly helped fuel what happened on Capitol Hill last week. Let me explain. The DeVos family has been a repeated donor to a number of right-wing causes over the years. One of them is the Michigan Freedom Fund, which helped promote a Michigan protest against the state's stay-at-home orders in mid-April. That rally, which saw about 3,000 people descend on the state's Capitol building in Lansing, sparked a slew of other protests in various states. And Trump endorsed those protests. Remember when he said, liberate Michigan? What did this all lead to? The plot to kidnap and kill the governor of Michigan last year, pretty much involving, again, the same wackos you saw attack the Capitol last week in Washington, D.C. Follow the money, as they say. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. And you can find them online at ulagency.org. Before we get to a Rick Bloomingdale, who heads the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, I want to read a statement from Rich Trumka. Rich, of course, the president of the National AFL-CIO, and he writes, the voices of working people were once again heard loud and clear with the election of two pro-union champions. He was referencing John Ossoff and the Reverend Raphael Warnock. After delivering the 2020 election for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, America's labor movement regrouped and remobilized to keep the momentum going in Georgia. So our elected officials will no longer profit from our pain, but fight for real COVID-19 relief and economic empowerment. Trump went on to say, it's not going to be easy, but now we have a generational opportunity to work with a pro-union president, a pro-worker House of Representatives, and a new Senate that will have the courage and the conviction to take on issues critical to our lives and livelihoods. And this starts with the PRO Act. They protect the right to organize so workers who want to form a union can do so freely and fairly. And it includes workplace safety, voting rights, infrastructure investment, pensions, paid family leave, and much, much more. So today we celebrate our democracy, and tomorrow we can once again get back to working and fighting like hell for all of America's working families. Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one and rejoin Rich Bloomingdale. Had him on the show about 6 weeks ago. Rich is the president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. And I was just reading your bio, Rich. I see you're celebrating 10 years. We just had Tim Berga, your buddy here in Ohio, heads the Ohio AFL-CIO. He just celebrated 10 years, so congratulations. And it's been a real smooth and easy ride, huh, Rick?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. With the 2010 and the emergence, you know, look, things have been boiling since Ronald Reagan fired the Patco workers, with working folks being pushed down in 2010, of course. You know, after the Great Recession, you know, we saw the emergency of the Tea Party, and you're right, it's been a bumpy ride.
and culminates last week with the rioting on Capitol Hill. My gosh, you know what's crazy? This blows me away. Newsweek did a poll, and they found out that 45% of Republican voters, 45%, supported the storming of the Capitol. And 68% said they were no threat to democracy. Rick, what's going on in America?
Well, clearly there's a whole narrative out there that refuses to take responsibility. Doesn't take these things seriously, thinks it's some big joke that people stormed the Capitol when two police officers, now a second one has passed away, two police officers were killed, a number of rioters, a number of them died or were killed. And, you know, they desecrated the Capitol. They waved the Confederate flag in the halls of the Capitol of the United States of America, something that didn't happen even during the height of the Civil War when they were expelling members of Congress for insurrection and sedition. And today you have members of a party and who seem to don't take this seriously, and certainly they're supposed to be the party of personal responsibility, certainly don't take that seriously, that, you know, these white folks who stormed the Capitol should be treated differently than African-Americans or young people who demonstrated peacefully in the streets of our cities. So it's mind-boggling that folks have seemed to have bought into this cult, driven by, you know, the right-wing media, who refuses to accept that Joe Biden was elected. You know, and I could go on for a long time, but it shows a real lack of character amongst some of their leaders, like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, who are cynically playing because they want to run for president in 2024. They think they're going to get these Trump voters by playing up this fraud. And instead of having some character and backbone and, you know, going out and telling those supporters, look, the election happened like we did in 2016. A number of people asked me if I thought there was anything going wrong, did anything go wrong? And maybe the Russians were stealing it. But, you know, all the folks, we didn't like the outcome of the election, but we accepted the outcome of the election because we saw that Donald Trump ran a campaign based on jobs and Hillary Clinton didn't. And, you know, so, but this time, rather than accept the results of the election, when Joe Biden got an incredible record turnout, 81 million votes, Donald Trump got 74 million, he lost. And, you know, I learned basic math that, you know, the most votes wins. And, you know, rather than accept that outcome, they played to a base. Rather than say to their base, look, you know, we got to accept the outcome. 4 years, let's regroup like they did, let's organize, and let's try to, in their minds, take the country back. Mm-hmm. Now, I think Joe Biden's, we've taken the country back. We're going to take it back for workers. But instead of doing that, they played into these, which incited people and, of course, led to the disastrous events of Wednesday and the disgraceful and disgusting events of an attempted coup and insurrection in the United States. I mean, they built a gallows on the grounds of the Capitol, and that one guy had zip ties looking to take hostages. They found pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails. You never saw that at any kind of rally, you know, Black Lives Matter, or, you know, none of that happened.
No, not at all.
Peacefully protesting, making our voices heard, which is what Americans should do. And had they done that, had they just stayed in front of the White House and listened to Donald Trump and then gone home, that's a whole different thing. Instead, they try to overthrow the government of the United States of America, and they should all be severely punished. This idea that we, oh, let's not do anything, we need to heal. The only way to heal is to do something, right? I mean, you don't let insurrectionists go. You don't walk them down the steps of the Capitol. They should have been all arrested right there for fomenting insurrection and a coup. And, you know, it's just it's amazing that they didn't. They weren't. But they are being rounded up and arrested now, and they should be. And the ones that served in the military should have their pensions stripped, their honors stripped. You know, this was nothing less than an attempt to overthrow the government of the United States of America.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading over the weekend, the CEO, mind you, the CEO of a software company in Pennsylvania was booted out of his job for taking part of the protest. So to your point, you know, people have to lose their jobs. They have to face, you know, criminal penalties, go to jail for this. I see your senator in Pennsylvania. He was on the talk show circuit yesterday. Pat Toomey said Trump should resign and could face criminal liability. This is a Republican speaking out. Do you think any of this is going to happen, Rick?
I think so. I think Speaker Pelosi is deadly serious about this. The fact that Mitch McConnell has laid out a timetable to do impeachment, you know, and look, I haven't agreed with Pat Toomey on anything since he got elected to the Senate of Pennsylvania. But I do agree with him. He has stood up on his oath to the Constitution, and he gets the seriousness of what happened here. This wasn't some joke, some lark. Oh, we're going to go storm the Capitol. He gets it. People broke in, busted up offices, killed people, and, you know, this is serious stuff. So I'm glad that Senator Toomey understands the seriousness, and I think there are also a number of Republicans, you know, this, like I said, they claim to be the party of personal responsibility, and letting this go is not the responsible thing to do. People need to be held accountable for their actions, period, end of sentence. They need to be held accountable.
I want to switch gears here a little bit. I saw a story about what's happening in your state Senate. I don't even know the status of it right now. Apparently, it's an individual, a Democrat, who won the race, I believe, by 300 votes. And his opponent said that some of the votes should not have counted. I guess these stories never end. Where are we? I'm talking about the race between Jim Brewster and Nicole Zicarelli. Can you bring us up to speed? I was talking about it at the beginning of the show, and I just thought it fits into the national scheme of things here about what votes should count and what votes do not count. Go ahead.
Right, and that goes to, and this is a long, drawn-out thing, but, yeah, Jim Brewster won. It was close, and we've certainly had close elections before. But what happens in those elections, most people accept their defeat, congratulate the other candidate, concede, and move on. In this case, they refused claiming that there was a court case to still happen, which happened on Friday, and in federal court about the validity of some of the ballots. So the Republicans' leadership over there, even though the election had been certified, the ballots had been counted as ordered by the courts. Now, when the Supreme Court back in November said, don't count the ballots, and they were only ruling on federal races, for anything received after 8 p.m. on Tuesday. As you may recall, our governor and then our Supreme Court upheld, due to the pandemic, extension that, and because of the, you know, DeJoy screwing with the mail, that any ballots received after 8 p.m. On Tuesday, they were all supposed to be received by 8 p.m. on Tuesday under the law that was written. But they changed that for the primary, and then the judges said, well, we're going to keep that in effect for the general. And the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, said that don't count those ballots. They didn't say it was wrong. They didn't rule on it. They just said segregate them. So what happened is the Secretary of State counted, it's a state race, so our state Supreme Court had said those votes were valid. And so they counted them, and Jim Brewster won. Now, their court case is those ballots should have never been counted. Well, and so they had their federal, and so the leadership said, well, we're not going to do anything till this court case happens. So the court case happened. We expect a ruling today, sometime later this afternoon. And, you know, we expect that the federal judge will say, look, your Supreme Court already ruled on this, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and I'm not going to interfere with a state court. That's what we expect. And then Jim Brewster will be seated. But again, they are kowtowing to a minority of voters who can't accept the results of a duly run and fairly run election. And that was John Fetterman's case in the chair, which they then voted to remove him from the chair, and because he wouldn't accept their point of order. So that was a little bit of fireworks last week. We expect everything to go fine, and that Jim Brewster will be seated as a state senator. And hopefully this debacle will be put behind us at some point after folks are held responsible. And, you know, we expect that they look, this, the law that we are running this election under, the fact that we can now vote by mail without an excuse, was a law that was passed by the Republicans not last year anymore, 2019, before the pandemic. Everybody came together, and it was a good bill. I mean, the Democrats gave up straight party voting, and the Republicans said, okay, we can have more vote by mail. And it worked great. We had a record turnout. Apparently, there are some folks that don't like a record turnout because some folks lost. although they did very well, actually. Yeah. They held on to the state Senate. They increased their majority in the state House. They won two of our statewide row offices. They won the treasurer's office, and they won the auditor general's office. So this seems to me the law worked pretty well. But they had one that they didn't like the results of, so all of a sudden we're going to go to court. So that's kind of where we're at. We don't expect anything except that the guy with the most votes is going to be sworn in when they come back on the 25th.
God forbid we have a huge voter turnout like we did, and that's apparently what they didn't like. All right, let's hold that thought. Rick Bloomingdale on our live line. Rick is president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. You can follow him on Twitter at R.W. Bloomingdale. And later in the show, we're going to check in with Andrew Tinkham on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Lots to talk about with him as well. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers, OFT-AFT.org is their website. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Rick Bloomingdale, Rick, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. You can find them online at PAAFLCIO.org. Rick, you probably heard the news last week that Marty Walsh, current mayor of Boston, formerly the head of the building trades over there in New England, was pegged as labor secretary. In fact, his name was first on the list maybe about a month ago when Biden started his process of picking his cabinet. And I know Rich Trumka was behind him. He had a lot of organizations behind him. Just any thoughts moving forward? I mean, just to think about the difference between Eugene Scalia, who's now the head of the Labor Department, and a union guy. And that just adds to, I guess, the person that's going to head the Education Department has a union background. That's one good thing about Joe Biden. He's not afraid to bring union brothers and sisters into his inner circle. What do you think moving forward with that choice there?
I think it's a terrific pick. Everything I've heard from my brothers and sisters up in Massachusetts, Marty Walsh has been, when he was a state rep, I believe, also. And when he was there, he voted with labor as my mayor. He's been great with labor. Of course, he comes out of labor. He's one of us. So we're thrilled that Marty Walsh is going to be Secretary of Labor. And as you mentioned, you couldn't have, you know, you had somebody for 4 years who was trying to constantly undermine the rights of working men and women, and just one regulation after another to roll back safety standards and all the kinds of things that make workers safe, make workplaces healthy. Scalia was rolling back, and you know, it couldn't be a more different, a 180, as opposite ends of the spectrum, as you go from Marty Walsh and from Scalia to Marty Walsh, who's going to do an incredible job as Secretary of Labor. You know, we couldn't be more thrilled. I'm glad Joe picked him. Sends a signal. You know, too often we have, you know, the Republicans are never shy about putting their allies into positions. Sometimes in the past we've had Democrats who, well, I got to show that I'm not too pro-labor, right? We've had that attitude. Joe Biden knows Marty Walsh. He trusts Marty Walsh. He knows he's going to fight for workers. And Joe Biden, he believes in what we believe in. So he's going to put allies in those departments and make sure that people understand that the Labor Department is about workers. We have the Commerce Department that's about business. And the Labor Department is about workers. And Marty Walsh is going to take up that mission. And I think he's going to make it stronger than ever in terms of worker training, workers' rights, the rights to join unions. I think Marty's going to be a great Secretary of Labor.
And sadly, because of the lack of direction from the federal government over the last several years, the states have to had to pick up on their own, especially when it comes to worker safety, things like that. I know a couple of states move forward on programs. Michigan, Virginia did that. I'm just wondering what your agenda is. The good news, like you pointed out, we've got a pro-labor president now and a vice president. But you still got still have some right wingers over there in Pennsylvania, like what we have here in Ohio. And just wondering what the outlook for 2021 with regard to workers' rights, worker safety. What are you hearing?
Well, I think that, you know, we're going to move some stuff, obviously, in the House. The Senate, now that it's tied 50-50, but, you know, you probably still have some Democrats who are going to get nervous about some of the things that we want to do. But, you know, the power, what we know and what Trump certainly showed us is that a dedicated core of ideologues, and I'm not saying that's our team, can make huge changes through regulation and through the administrative process. And our folks have to go in and do not an ideological, but what's right for workers, what's going to lift up workers to make sure. Look, I think a lot of this anger that's boiling around out there is, and look, this is no excuse for the folks who stormed the Capitol, not, and, you know, that was a small group, comparatively speaking. But some of the anger that drove Trump's vote is about people feel left behind. They see the 1% getting richer every day, and they felt left behind, and that caused them not to riot, but to vote for the other side, the anti-worker group, which I'll never understand. But then they get, you know, radicalized about your guns and about other issues. But so, you know, we got a real opportunity here to get people back to work in good jobs. And the way to get a good job is a union job. And building the right to have a union is going to be critical. And you can do some of that administratively. Obviously, we've got to pass the PRO Act. That's got to be top on Joe Biden's agenda. You know, we thought we were going to get the Employee Free Choice Act, and then, you know, we were moving ahead with it. And then, you know, President Obama wanted to do the Affordable Care Act. And so everybody's energy went into that. So labor law reform got put on the back burner. And, of course, then we had the disastrous elections of 2010, and that never again got considered. Now we have an opportunity. We have both houses again. Now we have nowhere near a 60 votes to overturn the filibuster, but maybe it's time for the filibuster to go away. And, you know, we need to get that passed, but we can still do a lot. Marty Walsh is going to be able to do a lot, the new Secretary of Education. You can do a lot administratively and promoting workers through, you know, they have the whole employment training division there under Marty Walsh, and, you know, making sure that people get trained for the good jobs, the good union jobs. You know, maybe people then with a good job and a pension and health care, you know, maybe they get back to thinking that America's a pretty okay place. But we're going to do that by economic security. We're going to do that by making sure that people have the right to join a union. That's how you lift up Americans.
In the state of Pennsylvania, what does it look like? I know you got this election you referred to in Allegheny County, but beyond that, any attacks on prevailing wage, things of that nature? I don't see anything with regard to right to work. We've seen a lot of states around the Midwest going right to work. What are you hearing?
Well, we still have our governor for 2 years, so anything really bad he'll veto. But, you know, we continue. That stuff will all be introduced. You know, all you need is one right winger to introduce a bill. So we expect that, you know, right to work will be introduced, repeal of prevent. All those will be introduced, whether or not they get hearings or see the light of day. We're going to have to work across the aisle, we do have Republicans that work with us that weren't in Washington trying to storm the Capitol. Republicans who actually believe that government has a role in people's lives. And we're going to work with those Republicans across the aisle to keep anything bad from happening. And we're going to continue to try to push our pro-worker agenda forward. We still need to get public sector OSHA for our public sector workers here in Pennsylvania. We still need to raise our minimum wage. So there are a lot of proactive things that we'll be doing. And, you know, we look forward to trying to build coalitions. The Democrats are still in a minority, but again, you know, if we can make a reasonable pitch to the leaders on the Republican side, and maybe they'll understand that some of this anger needs to be, you know, subsided by paying people more than $7.25 an hour.
Right.
You know, economic security goes a long way towards getting rid of some of the anger that's out there and some of the hatred that's just bubbling up. And those folks who were so deluded and hateful and, you know, storming the Capitol, I'm not saying a good job's going to make that go away, but we got to start somewhere with folks who didn't storm the Capitol but are upset nonetheless. We've got to show them what it means to be an American, what it means to be a union, what it means to be having a good middle class lifestyle. So I think we can, you know, we're going to keep pushing those agendas here in the state house and the state senate and with the governor of Pennsylvania, who's been a tremendous ally, by the way. And we've still got him for 2 years. And, you know, then we'll see what happens in 2022 when the next election comes around. But for the meantime, we're going to rely on his veto pen on the really bad stuff. And we're going to rely on our coalition building skills to try to move a proactive pro-worker agenda forward in our state house and our state senate.
Well said, my man. Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Well, one more question here. Are you a Steelers fan?
I like the Steelers. I like the Eagles, but I am not a Steelers fan. I feel bad for my brothers and sisters who are Steelers fans. Obviously, they would have liked to gone on to the Super Bowl or to the next level of the playoffs, but that didn't happen last night. But you know, I'm a Washington football team, and our guys didn't go forward either. So
No. If you know anything about the frustration in Cleveland, we are savoring the moment here. I just want to mention that.
The Browns have always been a doormat for the Steelers, and I think maybe some overconfidence was in there. I don't know. But, to my brother Tim Berger, congratulations. And, they played a better game. And I'm not going to be like the Trumplicans and say, it was stolen by the refs. Oh, my God. I could go down that road. But one team played better than the other, and that's all, and got more points than the other. So,
yeah,
kind of a metaphor. You know, you can blame the refs, or you can accept the outcome.
And, there you go.
You know, that's what we're doing nationally. Ted Cruz wants to blame the umps instead of accepting the outcome.
Good analogy. All right. Okay, Rick, thanks for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. You keep up the fight. We'll talk down the road, all right?
All right. Thank you.
Rick Bloomingdale, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, Andrew Tinkham on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective Democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll-free at 1-800-443-3752.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, which is part of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Andrew Tinkham. Andrew's with the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. He's going to give us some updates that involve money coming out of your pocket in various ways. Hey, Andrew, welcome back to the show. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, and it's always great to be back to discuss some of the issues we're seeing with utilities here in Ohio.
Okay, Andrew, let's start off with House Bill 6. I guess the legislature in the last session didn't proceed on this, and I assume they're going to try to work something out in this session. Where are we right now?
Yeah, there was a lot of developments in December. Obviously, we were in lame duck session with the General Assembly, and there were five bills setting out there. You know, as we came through to the end of 2020, there were three bills to repeal and revive the prior law. There was another consumer-friendly bill, which was House Bill 772, which the OCC certainly supported, which would get rid of the subsidies and also would get rid of the first energy recession-proof decoupling mechanism, which I think we discussed in December. And then there was also another bill introduced by Representative Hoops that intended to strengthen the nuclear subsidy audit process and delay the collection of the nuclear subsidies. As you mentioned, you know, we were in the lame duck session. None of those bills ended up passing through the General Assembly, and we call that it died in committee. And so moving forward, in order for those bills to be looked at, the 134th General Assembly would need to reintroduce those bills. And I know that both House Speaker Cupp and Senate President Hoffman have both made comments that they are definitely interested in re-looking into these issues with House Bill 6, and they certainly stated it's going to be a priority as they start the new year with the 134th Ohio General Assembly. Now, even with that, the bills did not, you know, even though the bills did not become law, the Franklin County Common Pleas Court did grant a preliminary injunction blocking part of House Bill 6 charges to customers, which would be the nuclear subsidies and the solar subsidies, from being collected from electric consumers, which was set to be collected starting January 1st, 2021. Likewise, a week later, the Ohio Supreme Court issued a temporary stay to block nuclear subsidy charges from appearing on electric bills. So the good news is, for at least residential customers who pay an electric bill, these charges will not be on your January bill and moving forward. What's kind of crazy in another twist, Energy Harbor, who now owns the two nuclear power plants, were lobbying the Ohio General Assembly to allow them the option to refuse the subsidy. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission requires electric generation plants that receive state subsidies to sell the electricity, to sell it at the local region and not on a national scheme. The requirement would cause the electric generation company to sell at a higher price, which might make it difficult to sell the electricity at all, which is why Energy Harbor was lobbying for the option to decline the subsidy. Like I said, I do think we'll see some developments here over the next few months, especially as the General Assembly starts to convene and forms their committees. But certainly I'll keep you posted on the developments of House Bill 6 as we move through the winter and spring.
What a story. Meanwhile, the Ohio Supreme Court, in a ruling, helped out customers of Ohio Edison. I guess they're going to get a refund. What happened in that case?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. In Ohio, regulated electric companies who operate under an electric security plan, they must undergo an annual profits review. Now, under the review, the utility must show that it did not earn too high of profits under an electric security plan. Now, if an electric utility is found to have earned too much in profits, the PUCO can order refunds to customers. So in Ohio Edison's 2017 annual profits review, the PUCO did not count the revenue collected from customers through what was a distribution modernization rider, which is one line item on an electric bill. Now, at that time, the OCC advocated that the revenue charges collected through that distribution charge should be included in the profits. And if they are included if refunds were needed, then Ohio Edison should provide those refunds. Now, unfortunately, in that case at the time, the PUC disagreed with us and sided with the utility and the PUCO staff on that issue. So what the OCC did is we appealed this decision to the Ohio Supreme Court. The court on December 1st of 2020 agreed with OCC, and the court instructed the PUCO to redo the profits review, this time including revenues from that distribution modernization rider. Now, OCC is hopeful that the redo of the profits test will allow refunds to Ohio Edison customers for Ohio Edison's 2017 earnings. Now, in a separate Ohio Supreme Court hearing in 2019, the court ruled that First Energy's distribution modernization rider, which we were just discussing, was not permitted under law, but not until nearly $500 million were collected from customers, dollars that unfortunately is not going to be returned to customers. Now, the Ohio Supreme Court did instruct First Energy to stop charging that distribution modernization rider. And what we're doing as an office, and we've been doing this for years, and hopefully we'll see some movement on this, but we have advocated and continue to advocate to have Ohio law revised to allow for refunds to customers when charges collected from customers are determined to be unlawful, which is what the Ohio Supreme Court found with this distribution modernization rider. So we have definitely, as an office, have been busy over to the Ohio Supreme Court in these cases where we don't agree with the PUCO ruling.
Andrew, we just got a couple minutes left. I know you want to say something about the natural gas standard choice offer, and apparently there's a lot of energy marketers out there that are so willing to take your money to change into a different supplier. But apparently the data shows that over the years, a lot of people pretty much got ripped off. Can you explain this real quickly?
Yes, and what we found is Columbia Gas has provided some figures that shows from 1997 to 2018, Ohioans who chose a marketer have paid $1.6 billion more than if they remained on the utility's competitive standard choice offer. Now, the standard choice offer, you know, for your, maybe some of your listeners that might not know what that means, is for customers who do not choose a marketer, those who come to your door, those who send you offers in the mail, when you stay with the utility, they have their own rate for those customers who don't choose or go through a government aggregation. And what we found is that standard choice offer has usually been the most competitive price for consumers and the safest price. Now, certainly if customers want to shop, they have that opportunity, but they need to look at that standard choice offer. Once again, it is a stable offer, and the way it's determined, it's determined through an auction process and the plus the NYMEX price, which has been very competitive on the market. Now, our office does have a lot of good information on the standard choice offer, along with other information on how to, you know, choose an energy supplier, you know, the historical prices for standard choice offers. So feel free to go out to our website and review that information at www.occ.ohio.gov.
Very good. Anything to save you money. Andrew, great job. Take care. We'll talk to you in the next month or so, okay?
That sounds good. Thank you, Flash. Have a good day.
You got it. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the communication workers and the local building trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.